Hello everyone, happy Halloween. My name is Noel Ramirez and this is actually my first APHA conference. So I'm really excited to be part of a panel of people that are doing fantastic work, but I'm also really excited to share with you the story of the Dorothy Mann Center and how we're evolving like the HIV epidemic in our programming and process initiatives. So today, during this presentation, we'll be discussing the following points. The psychosocial needs of HIV-positive urban young men who have sex with men of color, or UYMSMC, in medical settings. We'll also be discussing different phases of program planning as it relates to the SWEAT project at the Dorothy Mann Center. And we'll also be identifying some key process objectives and lessons learned that our organization experienced in developing our programming for HIV-positive urban young men who have sex with men of color. At a recent discussion in Philadelphia, the executive director of the National Minority AIDS Council, Paul Kawada, posed a question to the audience in reference to the National HIV-AIDS Strategy and other policies that are affecting prevention and care. And that question was, are you ready? Within this question were vital process questions that us as providers had to ask ourselves. Were our organization's staff ready to transform its practices to meet the changing faces and policies of HIV? Were our organizations flexible to the scarce resources and funding cuts that would occur in the next couple of years? Research indicates that YMSM, particularly black young men who have sex with men between the ages of 13 to 24, have experienced high increases in HIV incidence. Was our clinic ready to receive these young men when they entered care? Questions such as these have been in the minds of the folks at the Dorothy Mann Center for years, and this presentation will discuss our story in addressing these pivotal questions as it relates to practices in our clinic. So today's presentation will be referencing a generalized model for program development. The program development model has six steps: an assessment of needs, identification of problems, setting goals and objectives, developing interventions, implementing those interventions, and finally evaluating those results. Before we get started on the journey of program planning, here's a little bit about our organization. Dorothy Mann Center is located in North Philadelphia area. It began operations in around 1988 to respond namely to the growing rates of perinatally infected children and their families. Our clinic provides comprehensive services, sort of a one-stop shop model, to ensure that consumers have minimal barriers to accessing services that they need as it pertains to their HIV status. We offer medical case management, medical care, phlebotomy services, mental health care, pharmacy services, and finally prevention and education services in the community and in-house. We also have a family care model to ensure that whole families that are infected and affected with HIV can be seen at the same clinic. Here's a breakdown of our consumer base below the age of 24, folks who are infected with HIV. We have a total of approximately 205 young people accessing services at our clinic, and roughly 44% are behaviorally infected and 56% are perinatally infected. Of the behaviorally infected consumers, there's an even split of young men who have sex with men and heterosexual risk groups. With the introduction of HART in 1996, we began to see a reduction in the rate of perinatally infected consumers. And as perinatal infection rates decreased in incidence, our clinic began to see more and more increases amongst behaviorally infected folks, most of which recently have been around young men who have sex with men. Phase one of programming planning encourages program staff to take a closer look at its consumer bases and think critically of their needs and the gaps of services that may exist in their organization. The following cases are, among many others, were reasons why we as a clinic, we just had to do better for our clients. So case one was a person named Jose. These are all fictitious names. Jose was a 19-year-old Latino man who had sex with men. He was diagnosed recently in June 2011, and upon initial appointment, we found that he had an AIDS diagnosis. He had an extensive history of drug and alcohol abuse, sexual abuse, and violence, and he dropped out of high school in his senior year. He also reported that he was homeless and was engaging in survival sex to secure housing. During his initial appointment, the quote that he had said to us about how he felt with everything was, "I got all these things in my head about the virus, and I can't tell anyone." Case two was Jay. He was African-American MSM, age 22, and he was HIV positive in 2009. At the very moment when we were doing this program, he was lost to care, which means he hadn't been in the medical appointment for the past, at this point, 2 years. He had 3 medical appointments since diagnosis and had a huge history of trauma and was in foster care since the age of 10. The only reason why Jay was engaged back in medical care was because he was hospitalized for about a week due to severe anal condyloma that was probably precipitated by his low CD4 count. And when he came back into care, the providers asked him, you know, what was it that made you not want to come back? Like, what was the barrier? And it wasn't transportation, it wasn't housing, but it was, I'm just scared because I might know someone in the clinic. Most of our behaviorally infected youth experience the following: overwhelming histories of trauma, physical and sexual abuse, foster care placement, gay bashing, overwhelming histories of mental health, and most present with one or more current issues: IPV, intimate partner violence, homelessness, drug use, school dropout, unemployment, limited insurance, and continued abuse by caretakers, and of course, multiple STI infections. Outside of our clinic walls, there was also data that indicated that young men who have sex with men were in a state of crisis. Nationally, we saw that men who have sex with men account for approximately 53% of new infections and nearly half of the people living with HIV. Also, data shows that young men who have sex with men between the ages of 13 to 24 had a great percentage of increase in HIV incidence. Locally in Philadelphia, we saw similar trends. MSM accounted for approximately 35.6% of AIDS cases in Philadelphia, which indicated a lot of different things, one of which was advanced disease progression amongst this population and late testers. We also saw that MSM represented the highest risk group in Philadelphia, accounting for approximately 34% of HIV cases. Both national and local data indicated that MSM, particularly YMSM, were in critical danger, both in a surveillance perspective, but also in a treatment perspective. Research also indicates that various psychosocial stressors affected individuals' ability to manage HIV disease and access medical care. These stressors included societal pressures found within their sexual minority status, HIV stigma, poverty, mental health issues, social isolations, all of which had negative impacts on individuals' ability to access and be retained in care. So for our clinic, we had to identify a problem and it meant taking a closer look at our practices. And of course, we found something that we knew instinctively. We found poor performance measures among our YMSM consumers, which meant high rates of being lost to care, which also meant that individuals were just not attending their medical appointments. Acquisitions of sexually transmitted infections post-diagnosis, which meant that folks were having unprotected sex despite the fact that they knew they were positive, and were receiving services around risk reduction. And we also saw that young men who have sex with men were also struggling with adherence to medication. Also, we found that a lot of our young men who have sex with men were reporting levels of depression, anxiety, shame, but most significantly, patients were reporting stigma as reasons for not being engaged in medical care. The team at the Dorothy Mann Center set out the following goals to ensure that our YMSM consumers would reach optimal health. We wanted to focus on improving quality of care for our HIV-positive YMSM. We were failing, and this was definitely in the numbers. We wanted to also improve performance measures, which were STI acquisitions, medical appointments, attendance, anything within the HIV-HIV-QOL standards of care. But most of all, we wanted to be a big part of the reduction of community viral load in Philadelphia. We wanted to play a serious role in reducing the viral loads within our clinic. Our first main objective was to develop a group-level intervention which sought to increase rates of adherence, ART medications, medical appointments, condom use, but most significantly, we wanted to provide young people, young MSM, our consumers, with a safe space to address stigma and hopefully create healthier norms around HIV care. So research on programming for positives was the first critical step, and there was some research out there, but Nicole Krepis from the CDC conducted this fabulous meta-analytic review on prevention for positives and found the interventions with the following characteristics were found to reduce unprotected sex significantly. So interventions that included a behavioral theory, focused on HIV transmission behaviors, provided skill building, delivered to individuals on a one-on-one basis, in places where folks are receiving care, as well as delivering it in an intensive manner and delivered over a longer duration. And programs that really address different issues outside of HIV, which included serostatus, medications, adherence, and behaviors. She also identified three programs that demonstrated best practices, and the population that they were working with were injection drug users, adolescents who were also using drugs, and substance-using HIV-positive adults. However, missing from a lot of this research on efficacious interventions were programs that were geared to address the specific psychosocial, medical, and prevention issues that HIV-positive YMSM were experiencing. So while we were developing our intervention, we first wanted to identify our target population in our clinic. Who would benefit most from this group, and who are the consumers that presented with most risk? And we identified individuals through social workers, medical providers, and we also had, for 2 months, weekly rounds on our YMSM consumers. We also thought, and this is really important in regards to really looking at our program, was how does this group level intervention fit in our current service model? And we saw that a group level intervention would provide three areas of improvement. One, in risk reduction initiatives, but also in quality assurance, making young people at our clinic engaged in how programs were being developed. And we also saw a unique opportunity to engage consumers in this group to be part of our prevention program and being social networking recruiters for our HIV testing program. And finally, we launched pre-implementation process initiatives, which consisted of focus groups with staff, social workers, interviews with medical providers, and focus groups for young men who have sex with men in our clinic. Each focus group identified social isolation and stigma to be a significant barrier that stood in the way for our consumers to access care. A lot of our consumers also disclosed in these groups that they were struggling with maintaining and initiating healthy relationships with other men. A lot of them discussed IPV, abusive relationships, and whatnot. In the consumer focus groups, participants shared an interest in providing support and other leadership activities in the clinic, which really lent itself to an empowerment theoretical framework that we would later infuse in our programming. And of course, food, tokens, pizza, and wings were very, very popular, particularly from Mintouli's. Anyone in Philadelphia, there's a really good special for nonprofits. So that was definitely something that we discovered early on in our focus groups when the pizza and wings disappeared quickly. So based on the questionnaires we collected during our focus groups, the following topic areas was what a lot of folks wanted to learn more about and what they wanted to see in the program. And these included modules on HIV maintenance, which covered the biology of HIV, medication adherence, anal sex and anal health care were big topics that folks wanted to do. And they also wanted to learn more about case management. What were the resources in Philadelphia, because there were plenty, what were they eligible for? There was also a module on healthy relationships. We talked a lot about family and histories of trauma, and folks were really, really interested in how that impacted their ability to connect with other folks. We also used Noah's Ark, which is a popular show that folks wanted to see as a jumping point for conversation. Identity and sexual orientation was another big module that we had to talk about the intersectionality of an individual's identity with HIV, sexuality, and race. And of course, social programming was the number one interest that folks wanted to do. Young people wanted to not just be at the clinic, but they wanted to come to film festivals, conferences, and we started doing a lot of programming around just social programming, and folks were really interested in that. So one of the things we learned in terms of implementing this program was the importance of effective outreach and recruitment. To buffer any anticipated stigma, we framed outreach messages strategically. SWEAT was not marketed as a support group, Rather, it was marketed as a leadership development and education program, and the usual script was, someone at our clinic saw you as someone who had a lot of potential and was someone special. They didn't need to know that the reason why they were chosen was because they were lost to care, had STIs, and were having unprotected sex, but rather that they were special. And that really made a difference in recruitment. We learned that coaching for groups such as this was very important, particularly in talking about anonymity, confidentiality, and sadly, violence prevention. A lot of the young folks that we were working with had histories of violence, and we wanted to make sure that the space was safe. And of course, applications and screening sessions were very vital to ensuring that the appropriate individual comes to our group and is briefed on ground rules and also provided with questionnaires on topics to further modify programs. So our program initially started as a group level intervention, but slowly became a multi-pronged endeavor and structural intervention that was mostly led by our consumers. So participants who were involved in the group level intervention graduated and started getting involved in different parts of our clinic. There was a social networking street team program that folks got involved with where they recruited their friends to get tested for HIV. We also now have a men's health seminar quarterly for newly diagnosed folks coming into the clinic that some of the members participated as panel speakers. We also developed a program with other community collaborations called the Q-Spot, which is a drop-in resource program in downtown Philadelphia. And a lot of the participants at SWET were group leaders in that. We have a facilitator training for new cycles of SWET, so we have participants from the old group learn to become facilitators. And of course, social programming conferences, festivals, and movie nights are done periodically throughout the year. So our pilot project taught us quite a lot, especially about group dynamics. We learned that establishing group trust and rapport was vital. Participants weren't just picked out of a list of names. We had to really establish a relationship with consumers. Anxieties about knowing each other, the Philadelphia community is relatively small, and so a lot of the participants were really nervous that they might see someone they knew. And in fact, there were cases where folks saw folks that they suspected infected them, and we had to address that accordingly. We learned that it worked well to have a group that was mixed with treatment-naive and treatment-experienced individuals, especially when we started talking about medication adherence. We also learned that group-level interventions really improved coordination of services. We had folks really consult with the group leaders about medical case management issues, physicians, and it just provided us with another opportunity to screen and check and make sure that our patients were receiving full care. And as well, the group level intervention really provided participants with an opportunity to get to know the staff better. And that really increased interest in coming to the medical appointments that they had. Finally, with group structure, we learned that incentives helped. I mean, we tried to think maybe it didn't, but the food was a big call for the participants in there. And, you know, I mean, not to be funny, but also with food, sometimes this was actually the only meal that they had in the day that was prepared for them. And so that was actually a big factor of our success. We learned that closed groups were preferred, which provided a sense of safety. We even had this clause about healthy relationships and healthy boundaries, and we encouraged participants to not hook up with one another within the first month, because I think a lot of folks came into it thinking that this was the service that we were providing, and it wasn't. And that led to some really interesting conversations, particularly around week 6 when the rule was done. Intergenerational programming with people living with HIV assisted in decreasing stigma. We had a really unique opportunity to come to DC at the NAPL conference in February, and our young people had an opportunity to live and interact with participants at ACT UP, as well as our local chapter of Positive Women's Network, and that really made a big difference because our young people saw that you can be older and be positive, and that was incredible for the participants there. Field trips assisted with group bonding, but I will also add, if you are going to facilitate a field trip, it's a lot of time for staff to really make sure folks don't get rowdy, which happens quite often. And as well, youth-specific groups were important. There are a lot of different groups for participants in Philadelphia who are living with HIV, but being youth-specific was a critical factor to them attending. A lot of strength helped this program come off the ground, particularly buy-in from staff. That was completely vital. HIV clinics are overburdened, and if your staff is not on board with implementing this program, it won't come off the ground. We did have some discretionary funding for food and incentives, and one staff, me, FTE hours to coordinate this process. We also had a unique clinic structure where individuals came monthly, and so we had a lot of contact with our consumers per medical care and access to their medical data, which really helped with evaluation. Oh, and these were the weaknesses. And some of the outcomes were increased engagement in medical care, participants reported more positive perceptions, decreased levels of stigma, and right now there's data that's being processed by an excellent graduate student, and these were just some of the instruments that we used. And finally, I asked if there are any providers here in this audience to really think about your readiness to develop programming and interventions for your population, and really stressing the assessment phase of this model, because that will drive sort of the initiatives after that. All right, that's all. Thank you.